there, you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of the Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where we shine a light on partnerships and programs that can serve our beautiful natural resources in Marion County. We are illuminating our Soil and Water Conservation District mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences. And I'm your host, Jenny Ammon, natural resource educator with Marion SWCD. And on this episode, we get to talk with Amy Garrett with OSU Extension Small Farms Program. And she's also the president of the Dry Farming Institute. Amy's got a pretty impressive background and she's an impressive person. She's got 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry, ranging from landscape design, installation and maintenance, to organic farming, research, and education. She's been working with Extension Small Farms Program in the Southern Willamette Valley since 2011 and initiated the OSU Dry Farm Project in 2014. There's so much more she's done, and I would love her to give us a little bit more about that picture and introduce herself. So welcome, Amy.
Thank you, Jenny.
Well, what can you tell us about that background? It's so impressive. The work that you've been doing over the last decade, two decades is fantastic. Can you give us a little bit more information about you and that awesome background?
Sure thing. Yeah, I'm from Indiana or the suburbs of Indianapolis originally. And I moved out to Oregon initially for grad school back in 2007. Started my position with Small Farms Program with OSU Extension in 2011. And realized pretty quickly in my position that a lot of the growers I worked with were on land without water rights or limited water availability, especially new and beginning farmers that didn't come from farm families were on land with limited water. And then in the drought, the drought that we experienced in 2015, a lot of growers had their irrigation cut off early in the growing season. So that's really what kind of keyed me into dry farming when I met some farmers that were in their one in particular that was in his 70s and that had been dry farming a variety of fruits and vegetables that are known to be or recommended to be irrigated in our area. And then went down to California and case studied other growers that were growing tomatoes, potatoes, squash, melon, dry beans, orchard crops, and grapes are more commonly known to be dry farmed. So that's really what kind of kicked off the OSU Dry Farming Project. I got the courage to host our first demonstration here in Corvallis on 2015, which turned out to be a drought year. So that field day ended up having about 100 people attend. And from there, the Dry Farming Collaborative got started because a lot of growers that attended that field day, you know, had experienced maybe their well run dry, their irrigation cut off. You know, there's pictures floating around of the Columbia Basin, pretty much dry. And it's like, okay, what is our future here? Mm-hmm. So we started, we created this grassroots group, the Dry Farming Collaborative, to create a platform for knowledge and knowledge exchange and communication amongst all of the growers, plant breeders, researchers, educators that were interested in exploring this concept of growing with little to no irrigation and share knowledge, resources, information as we kind of moved forward. And that has really blossomed into a multifaceted participatory climate adaptation research project. And then another little bit to add on to that is from the Dry Farming Collaborative, so we have a Facebook group, which anyone is welcome to join. We have an Instagram, but there is a nonprofit organization that blossomed out of this grassroots group, the Dry Farming Collaborative, called the Dry Farming Institute. So dryfarming.org is that website. But that group is composed, the board is composed mostly of farmers, but also some researchers. And I'm helping to chair the board. And yeah, so there's a lot of growth and interest in this concept, especially as we're amidst a drought again here in 2021.
Man, we're stacking these up, Amy. Well, that is really impressive. I took a bunch of notes because the dry farming collaborative in itself being that grassroots built up, you had people driving things probably by question and experiences.
Absolutely.
You said it turned into more of a multifaceted kind of climate adaption, and you have researchers and you have farmers and you have people engaged. Is this just Oregon or is this across the country?
Yeah, that's a great question. So while this group really started in the Willamette Valley, it was initially composed of a lot of farmers throughout the Willamette Valley into Southern Oregon. And currently, we have a lot of folks in Washington engaged now, also down into California. But when you look in at our Dry Farming Collaborative Facebook group, there is a lot of international interest and people from all over the world there. Recently, there's been a real influx of people requesting to join the Dry Farming Collaborative Facebook group. I've accepted maybe 100 or so people in the past few days. Maybe there was an article that came out, but yeah, from different parts of Europe, from Africa, from South America, from different states in the United States, Texas, even the East Coast. So I'm not sure how everyone is finding out about it, but I think there's a lot of things happening in the world today that are adapting to these extremes that we're all experiencing in a proactive way. So I think that there is growing global interest in this concept of learning how to grow within the constraints of our climate without a ton of inputs, which we're finding unsustainable.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things our guests last month, we talked about actionable items. Awareness is great, but it sounds like this dryfarming.org alongside of the collaborative is very actionable and completely compatible with what's happening with our climate.
Yeah, a couple of the projects that have blossomed out of that, the nonprofit, are a marketing campaign helping farmers that are selling dry farm produce, whether that's tomatoes, melons, grapes, zucchini, whatever, but having a label and some materials that help explain to consumers what values are embedded in their purchase, adapting to a hotter, drier climate, enhanced flavor, et cetera. What are the benefits of dry farming? And then the other program is a resilient seed stewardship program. We've learned in our variety trials with the Oregon State University Extension Service that there's definitely some varieties that are more suitable for dry farming in our area than others. So a lot of people ask, where do I find these varieties? And we aim to put together a directory of varieties that have been shown in our variety trials to excel in a dry farm system, or other varieties that have been bred for drought tolerance, but start to help people know where to source these and where to basically as a starting point. If they're going to start dry farming, where can they get the seeds that have some history of doing well in that sort of situation?
These are just magical. I feel like our consumers have become so intelligent and aware, from salmon safe practices to like we were just discussing how to get seeds that will do better in our changing climate in our backyard garden. And so having that directory is a blessing.
Yeah, we'll be working more on that this fall. It's not quite out yet, but yeah, there's much to do.
Oh. That is wonderful. Thank you for your work on that. That's very cool. And I wanted to just pick back up, not that I'm hungry or anything, but you talked specifically about tomatoes and melons and grapes, which fruits and vegetables do really well with the technique of dry farming. And I had the, excuse the pun here, Amy, but the taste and see moment at a farm tour in 2009. I think it was Gowan Family Farm. Is that right?
Yeah, back in 2019.
Yeah, that one. The field tour was amazing. And they are most humble family. But I tasted the best tomatoes in my life. It was awesome. So I'm just wondering if you can give our listeners a little background. This is not a new technique. Dry farming isn't, it may be slightly out of the mainstream, but Could you give a little glimpse as to what the history is and why it seems that the vegetables taste so much more rich?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, dry farming is not a new concept. There's a long history. And I have been collecting and like the stories, and I would love to pull them all together in a way for other people to really learn the history of dry farming. So before the rise of dams and aquifer pumping, dry farming, it maybe wasn't called dry farming, but that was how people farmed. It was within the constraints of their climate. And when I started looking around just on the West Coast, I mean, there's the Hopi, Michael Katuwa Johnson is a Hopi dryland farmer. And he attended our winter meeting this past February and shared about the, for millennia, the history of dryland farming in the Hopi tribe. So, and then also there was another woman named Maya Allen who shared the history of a Black settlement down in Arizona that got its start with dry farming. So by necessity, because there was not water available. So there's a rich history of, you know, people doing it by necessity and also by choice. The Hopi chose to be there. They were not among the tribes that were relocated elsewhere. They chose to live in this really arid, extreme climate. And it's a spiritual practice even to like plant annually. So they've been planting and saving seeds for millennia in this extreme climate. So yeah, and then when you look also across the globe, I mean, there's other areas in the Mediterranean, rich history of dry farming. There's a lot of varieties we've learned about from Italian and Spanish colleagues. So we are trialing a lot of those varieties this year. For example, winter tomatoes or storage tomatoes, tomatoes that you harvest right now, like in August, September, and they store in your pantry hanging until for like 5 to 8 months. So we can be eating these in the winter. They don't require freezing or canning. So it's just, there's so much knowledge out there. And I feel like we're just pulling it all together. But one of our goals is to make pull together a resource hub. So all these these stories that I've been searching out are more easily accessed by other people interested.
Absolutely. That sounds like a beautiful idea. The sourcing and the fact that, like you said, we've had traditional tribes using that because that's the place they chose to settle. That is kind of where we're at. We can't keep moving, right? We're going to have some climate migration, but it's best to work with the land where you're at. And so those hubs of information are wonderful resources to look forward to and be knowledgeable about.
Yeah, I think like place-based, low input approaches, like really paying attention to the weather and the soil moisture and doing things at the right time. I think some of those practices are really about being present versus scheduling it on a calendar. And I think that has implications probably across our lives, not just in farming, just the ability to really pay attention, be present, and do things at the right time.
Oh man, this past year taught us that, at least me personally taught me that you have to be right where you are because you can't plan too far ahead. So
yeah, absolutely. A lot of us have learned that the hard way, but yeah, definitely.
Well, I just want to take a minute here to give the station a little heads up. We're recording for KMUZ. This is a regular segment on the Willamette Wake Up. It's called the Conservation Spotlight. And we have the pleasure of speaking with Amy Garrett with the OSU Extension Small Farms Program. So she's been talking about dry farming and some of the amazing resources she's pulling together to talk about the seeds and the different varieties. And the dryfarming.org will be a great site if you're interested in this topic to go hit up. And there's a lot of information there. But I wanted to just quick mention our summers have been an eye-opening realization, and you dropped 3 years of drought. We had, was it 2011, 2015, and now 2021. And we've just been working our way through these droughts. Eye-opening for some people that maybe aren't from here, like me. I grew up in Iowa and water rights weren't a thing. We did have droughts, but it's different here because it's the Willamette Valley and it's supposed to be wet. So what are your experiences with participating in interest in dry farming. Said you had at the beginning 100 attendees back in 2015. What has that looked like since then as far as the interest and participation?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that back in 2015, that was a field day that happened in a drought year. So it was a big surge of interest there. And since then, the Dry Farming Collaborative has gotten established. And I think in that first year, 2016, we maybe reached 150 or maybe 200 members of people joining our Facebook group or subscribing to our email list, which is more for the people engaged in our research trials. But that kind of curve has been gradually increasing, but I think it's somewhat doing like kind of a hockey stick thing in the past few months or year even, because we now have about 1,300 members subscribed. There are multiple research projects led by not just me, but by other researchers at OSU. You know, Alex Stone is screening 200 varieties of tomatoes, trying to establish a dry farm tomato production system for the Willamette Valley. My colleague Lucas Niebert is working on corn breeding and making selections and crosses for dry farming in our area. And there's a variety, we're doing potato variety trials as well, exploring low and no-till, what that looks like in a dry farm setting. So there's just a kind of a definite explosion of interest in, and I think, you know, also the water issues that whenever you turn into the news, it like just listing the, you know, the fires and the water issues happening all around us. It's exploring dry farming is becoming more of a mainstream topic, not like kind of a radical fringe thing, which maybe is what it started out to be or what it seems like to the majority at the start. Yeah.
Yeah, the no-till and the adding organic matter, as our favorite James Cassidy would say, just add organic matter. But those are a few things we can do. And you mentioned the keeping track of soil moisture. We've been really, Brandon Bishop, who just left to go to another position from the SWCD here, he was amazing to listen to about the technologies for tracking your moisture and making sure that you're really only irrigating if you need to. But what other pieces of information could you share with the listeners and residents about just being proactive? You know, I know awareness drives action, but we're ready for action now. What kinds of tips would you give to the listeners about improving some of that backyard or agriculture, I guess?
Yeah, I think that some good starting points for people who are just considering exploring dry farming is really assessing your site, because all of our sites are typically different. And often none of us are on an ideal site with like amazing deep soil with water holding capacity, you know, like it's usually not optimal. So there's a variety of tools we can use to improve our conditions over time. But I just connected with someone and loaned them our soil auger. So to pull a 5-foot soil core and just like for the experience of seeing what their soil is like down to a depth of 5 feet, like maybe some people might encounter a restrictive layer or rock or bedrock even on some sites. So understanding what your plant roots are going to be experiencing, I think, is a great way to like get into dry farming, and also getting a cover crop established this fall. Like we are already starting to take inventory on our cover crop seeds, and we want to get cover crops planted on the plots we're going to be dry farming next year at the end of September or by the first week of October at the latest. Usually, ideally, it would be timed right before the rains settle in.
Yes.
So those are important pieces. And we have an Intro to Dry Farming extension publication that's free and available online that outlines a lot of the basic practices that support dry farming. So also the Dry Farming Collaborative, I've mentioned a few times, and so have you, but this would be a great platform for anybody interested to plug in. It's a good way to stay in the loop about upcoming. We just had a field day a week or two ago. with 60 people attending. We also do some virtual. We have a YouTube channel that we're going to be starting to add more content to. So that'll be a dry farming collaborative YouTube channel. We only have one video up there currently, but that'll be changing, and we'll be adding to that in the coming months. We have a winter meeting also. So this is, okay. I think one of which will be held virtually. It was virtual last year because of the pandemic, and we got, like more than double the attendance we normally have because winter travel is a little sketchy over the past. So I think we might continue doing that virtually, given that, we don't want people to, you know, have people drive over icy mountain passes mm-hmm. to come to our meeting. So that is free and open to the public. So to anyone interested in dry farming, and that would be a great opportunity to learn, hear about the results from our trials this past year, nice. Network and connect with other growers exploring this, and find out ways that you can get engaged in research or varieties for your own independent trials. So I think that would be a great gateway.
Amy, can our listeners join the listserv to get that winter meeting date, or is that announced yet?
No, we'll send out a doodle poll, and we'll actually share about that also on the Dry Farming Collaborative Facebook group. Yeah, so that'll be shared on Facebook, on Instagram, also the Dry Farming Institute's e-newsletter. So that e-newsletter will not just share about local events, but also partner events and other neighboring states or beyond even. So I think the Dry Farming Institute's e-newsletter would be another great way to plug in.
I will tell folks that one of the great things about having OSU is that it serves as a bit of a natural conduit for what services your SWCDs can provide. There's grants available for a cover crop to put those in to save the soil, hold it in place, and add organic matter. So that was one of Amy's tips. And you can contact one of our agricultural planners to get involved in our landowner assistance grant program. I will tell you that is worth its weight in black gold. Ha, another pun. But it is a wonderful conservation practice to implement. And then, Amy, we're running down on time. It was awesome talking to you. I feel like this time went way too fast. But is there any other thoughts that you'd like to share today?
No, I think that, getting, you know, if anybody's interested in exploring this a little further or learning about it, you know, there's this community it'd be great to connect in with the community. And then in experimenting on your own, this is a great time of year to be thinking about it, because a lot of people want to get started like in May, and it's like, well, you know, ideally you're planning a year ahead. So this is the perfect time to get started small, mm-hmm. get your cover crop planted, attend our winter meeting, and then decide what you want to plant, or even just connect with other farmers who have been doing it. And one more thing I'd like to add is that there's Fill Your Pantry events, kind of throughout the valley that happen in the fall and up until the end of the year. So we'll be tabling. We'll have some folks from the Dry Farming Collaborative and the Dry Farming Institute tabling at some of these Fill Your Pantry events if you want to taste some dry farm produce.
Oh, and they do. Trust me, folks, you do. It's fantastic. And so those Fill Your Pantry events, we will try to share those on our Facebook page too. If they're on Facebook, we'll try to hook them up there. And the dryfarming.org was another resource Amy talked about. This was wonderful. I feel very strongly that the planning ahead and the being present with where you are, knowing your place, the place-based education and place-based conservation is very important. So thank you all so much for listening today. And thank you to our wonderful guest, Amy Garrett. We just scratched the surface on this, folks. So make sure you're plugging into that winter meeting and getting connected to the YouTube channel that they'll be posting more videos on. And those Fill Your Pantry events are amazing as well. So thank you for shining your light. We know the importance of partnerships. And if you'd like more information, you could check out our website as well as our Facebook page. And just a little plug, October 1st is coming, and it's our first Fridays. They're kicking back up. So you can check our website for the lineup for First Friday events. And next month, we get to host our brand new district manager, Amy Boyd. So tune in on the third Wednesday for the Willamette Wake Up. This is the Conservation Spotlight, and thanks for listening and shining your light.